Summer's almost well underway, and by now you've probably indulged in air conditioning, tank tops, sunscreen, flip-flops, cool beverages. But the summer heat shouldn't be an excuse to stay indoors. I'm Jabulani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we're joined by our Nature in the City experts. They have some ideas on where to have a wildlife adventure that's within reach in the metro. We'll be talking about area trails that are easily accessible from a walk in the park to a hike along the Blue River. Plus, we'll be talking about what critters to look out for along the way. We'll also discuss other summer topics such as birds, bats, and baby animals. Plus, tell us what you're hearing and seeing in your own backyard. Nature in the City on today's Central Standard, following this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. With a mild winter and abbreviated spring, we head into the summer of 2012. And considering last year's summer drought, it'll be interesting to see what nature has in store as we look ahead. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabulani LaFall. It's time for another edition of Nature in the City with our resident experts, Larry Rizzo, a natural history biologist with the Missouri Department of Conservation, and Joe Werner, a biologist and urban ecologist. Welcome back to the show once again, gentlemen.
Thank you, Jabulani. Good morning.
Good morning, Jabulani.
Now, summer doesn't officially begin until June 20th, but kids are out of school. It's getting a little warmer. We're already getting some indications of summer in the natural world here in the metro. What's happening right now as we prepare for the summer season? Don't answer at once.
Well, no. Well, I tell you what, this has really been an interesting year, Jabulani, with the weather changing. Of course, a mild winter, as you mentioned, and a very early spring. You know, if you look at the phenology or the successional development of the plants out there, you know, we're several weeks ahead of what we typically would be at this year. And consequently, there are other things happening, you know, that kind of follow with the insect population and the plants blooming and the availability of seeds and things of that sort that, you know, the animals that depend upon those things are kind of moving along a little faster, too. Birds nesting earlier. Some birds having second clutches already.
The cicadas are starting to call in the evening. Does that mean nature is preparing for summer? And are these cicadas calling earlier than usual?
Oh, I don't know. Perhaps a little bit. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is a real summer sound. Just that droning sound of cicadas just makes me think of hot summer weather. And I usually think of them gearing up a little more toward the end of this month versus the beginning of it. So I would say, yeah, they're a little early.
Now, remind our listeners what cicadas are and where they nest.
Well, they have an unfortunate name they go by, which we used as kids, as locusts. But a locust is really more of a grasshopper,
right?
And they're not a locust. They are a bug in insect terms, which a lot of people don't realize there is a whole family of insects called the bugs. So not all insects are bugs, but all bugs are insects, and they are one of them.
Not all insects are bugs.
Right.
But all bugs are insects.
That's correct.
This is nature.
It's a taxonomic thing.
Exactly. Are there any unusual patterns of plants or animals this year that we should be thinking about going into summer? Plant growth, for instance. A little earlier this year?
Definitely earlier this year, and it kind of remains to be seen if, you know, do we see that same pattern continue on in the following months, or do things sort of level out as we get farther into the growing season, which I would kind of expect the latter, but I don't know. And I don't know, you know, does the early spring and heat translate into a brutally hot summer? It may, but it may not. We don't know.
What species of plant have grown a little earlier than usual or permeated a little earlier than usual here?
Pretty much all of them. But, you know, it's particularly noticeable in the blooming, you know, the more showier blooming things that are just because they're more visible to us. I mean, I was in the Ozarks in late March, and dogwoods were almost full bloom in late March, and it's just unheard of, and usually more late April and even early May.
We haven't had an unusual amount of precipitation, though.
Oh, no.
No, we're dry, as a matter of fact.
It is interesting, Jabulani. Even some of the prairie plants that you know, we typically see later in the month. They're starting to bloom right now. And if you were to go to some places around the Kansas City area, like Jerry Smith Park, where there's a wonderful prairie there, or even over to the Anita Gorman Discovery Center, where they have prairie plantings as landscaping plants out, you'll see some prairie plants blooming right now. And, of course, they are adapted to a drier environment, so they're doing pretty well now.
Well, given the fact that it's warmer, what should we be looking out for this year on our city's trails and streams?
Boy, I tell you what, the herps are going to be very active. I've talked to a lot of people that you know, have been out and seen garter snakes, black rat snakes, things of that sort.
What are some area trails that people should be checking out here this season?
We've got quite a list. We've got a few we wanted to mention on the Kansas side as well as the Missouri side. And these are trails we've tried to mention, of course, that tie into our theme that are more nature-oriented, where we see some interesting flora and fauna. Kill Creek Park over near DeSoto, which is Johnson County Parks. They have some nice trails out there just there recently. Overland Park Arboretum and the Prairie Center near Olathe are all good ones in Kansas. On the Missouri side, Jerry Smith Park, as we mentioned, has a little half-mile loop that takes you through some native remnant prairie, the only one left in Jackson County. Maple Woods Natural Area up in Gladstone, which is forested. And a really neat trail complex that's being built in Swope Park, basically between Lake of the Woods and Oldham Roads is where the most current section is. And that's been constructed by a mountain biking organization called the Earth Riders Trails Association. But they also make great hiking trails that take you through some really pretty scenery.
When is the Swope Park Trail expected to be completed?
Boy, that's a good question, because it's a very ambitious trail project that's also going to link into trails all southward down the Blue River. But you can get on the ERTA, Earth Riders Trails Association, website and check it out. We've also got nice trail systems at some of the local nature centers like Baroque Woods in Blue Springs and Martha Lafitte Thompson up in Liberty.
Mm-hmm. Jordan?
Well, I think what Larry just did was he took us through a tour of the ecology of the Kansas City area. If you were to start over in Kansas, you know, where there's some remnant prairies, some very nice remnant prairies. Actually, Kansas City is located very strategically, you know, as far as the natural resources are concerned, with the Missouri River and the forests of the south and the east and meeting the prairies of the west. And, you know, with all these natural resources led to Kansas City being here and being developed as the hub of agriculture and all that it is, manufacturing with the river and the water necessary for that. But anyway, those beautiful areas that Larry's been talking about, you know, the prairies and the woodlands, they're just, you know, so accessible here in Kansas City. We're very fortunate. You know, we've got areas like the Blue River Parkway, you know, which is a Jackson County park, that literally stretches from the interior of Kansas City out to the outer boundaries of the metropolitan area.
It's spring, obviously, late spring going into summer, so there are lots of baby animals roaming around this area. Might see some baby animals out on some of these trails you just described. What should we expect to encounter out there?
Well, I think that, first of all, you need to realize that probably there's an adult in attendance if you see a baby animal out there.
That's the first thing you need to realize, right.
Yeah, leave it alone. And however, if you know, if you see you know, a dead adult or something, why, there are some places that take care of young animals, like the Lakeside Nature Center in Swope Park or Operation Wildlife over in Leadwood, Kansas. They cover you know, the Missouri side of the state line at Nature Center in Swope Park, and Operation Wildlife covers the Kansas side. So they take injured and orphaned animals. But in general, you know, there's an adult in attendance if you see something out there.
Which smaller animals tend to wander out?
Well, you see things like, you know, little birds being blown out of nests, as an example. And, you know, you often hear these stories, well, you can't touch a baby bird or the adult won't take care of it. You know, you can put it back up in the nest and the adult, you know, the nesting instinct is very, very strong.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. The show is Central Standard, and it's our latest edition of Nature in the City. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guests are Larry Rizzo and he's a natural history biologist with the Missouri Department of Conservation. And Joe Werner is a biologist and urban ecologist. They make up the duo of Nature in the City. Kansas City, what have you been noticing around town as it relates to plants and animals and their summer activity? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We want to know, Kansas City, what's been going on in your backyard. Once again, that number is 816-235-2888. You can also shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. You talked about baby birds, Joe Werner. Let's discuss what's going on with summer birds. What are some of our fine feathered friends up to?
Well, I tell you what, it's a very, very busy time. You know, with the mild winter we had, there were a lot of insects out early and a lot of food for the flycatchers, you know, just a wide variety of birds that typically nest in the city, you know, like the cardinals and the blue jays are pretty typical. We're seeing more and more birds like sharp-shinned hawks that are nesting in the area, Cooper's hawks, you know, which those are pretty much at the top of the food chain or food pyramid. They eat other birds, actually. So, you know, it all ties together. It's kind of interesting to see these things as, you know, these species as they become more abundant over time, or perhaps because of a severe winter, why they're set back.
Larry, I have a bird right outside my window, or at least it sounds like it's right outside of my window. I live in Midtown, and it appears to make, it's cute at first. It's really cute at first, the sound this bird makes. But after a while, it gets a little annoying. I started calling it Laser Bird. Pew, pew, pew. It makes that pew, like it's literally in the tree hiding, playing Space Invaders or something like that. What species of bird is that likely to be?
Well, I'm
Hold on, just a second. Pew, pew, pew.
I'm speculating here. But there's a bird called the tufted titmouse that can make some sounds like that. It's kind of it's a little bit of a wheezy sound,
right,
like that. And right now, it's important to remember, birds are on different timing as far as their nesting. The birds that are here year-round, we call the permanent residents, and they include birds like the titmouse, the chickadees, the cardinals. They get going earlier.
Get going all right.
The migrants, we have migrant songbirds that don't get back here until May, so obviously they don't start nesting till they arrive, and well, the permanent residents can start in March and things. So they've already produced young, and when they do that, those young birds are flying around. They look visually just like adults. They're the same size, but they're still dependent on the adults, so they're hanging around together in little family groups and making lots of noises where the adults stay in contact with them and bring them food. So I think that's probably kind of what's going on there.
Joe Werner?
Well, if those are titmice that you're hearing, and that's an excellent choice, I think. One thing that you need to realize is that those are cavity nesters, and cavity nesting birds are really at a disadvantage right now because a lot of people will take branches down or trees down that have cavities in them. Sometimes they're threatening property, but oftentimes they're not.
Now, would this cavity nesting include perhaps finding a hole inside of a building or something like that? Is it always trees?
Well, that could certainly happen, but you know, typically, other than things like you know, the European starling and English sparrow, which nest in, you know, cavities and buildings, all. Typically, most native birds will not do that. Now, of course, you have woodpeckers that will get into a house, or you may have something like a phoebe that will nest on on the side of a house if there's an appropriate place. Barn swallows, of course, do the same thing. So,
is it okay with you fellas if I continue to call them laser birds? is that cool?
Well, do they answer your call?
Sometimes. Nolan in Lawrence writes in, this warmer climate seems to have caused a few bizarre events. Over the winter and early spring, lots of snowy owls were seen in the Midwest. One was sighted at Clinton Lake Dam, and people were able to get within arm's reach of the bird because it was so exhausted from the extra long migration and a smaller food supply. Alternatively, Nolan hears that coyotes are having it really good because of the high food supply. Is this true? Also, could you please talk about other wildlife that may be in trouble because of this warmer weather and what we can do to help? Very long email, but a good one from Nolan in Lawrence.
Well, let me
let's address the snowy owl first.
Okay, the snowy owl. Well, as Larry, I think, was talking about snowy owls on the last time we were in here, there was just a real abundance of them. His comment about the easy approach that you can take to a snowy owl and they won't fly away, they're usually from the tundra, and so they're not used to people, so you can't approach them like that. They're probably not exhausted, although, you know, sometimes the owls that snowy owls that come down here don't make it back simply because it's not a true migration. But they're very approachable. You can get there were some very good pictures that photographers got of the snowy owls in the Kansas and Missouri area this past year.
Yeah, I took a number of deceased ones to the museum at KU in Lawrence, which where they examine them and learn a lot from them and save them as study specimens. In their collection, and virtually all of them were severely underweight, suggesting they just aren't able to feed themselves well down. They're just not adapted to this part of the world.
Right, so they come down here and kind of get stuck.
Kind of a one-way migration, yeah, and probably we're not going to make it back up north, which is what we've kind of always speculated with those birds.
Is it because of the mild winter that they weren't able to adapt, or is it just generally the different topography and ecology down here?
No. It's totally foreign to them to even be places where there are trees, much less humans, power lines, cars, roads, signs, just different predators, different prey. Everything is just it's a totally different world.
How do they make it down here?
Well, they're usually tied into the lemming population up north. And when there's an abundant lemming population, which is their natural prey up north, why there's greater reproduction, more young survive. The more young that survive, the greater distance they get pushed south just because of competition and all. So
it's kind of a effect where the lemming population is explosive and increases. The owls reproduce in accordance with that, so their numbers increase. Then at some point the lemming population crashes and you have an abundance of owls with not enough food to go around. So their trend lags the population of lemmings, and in those years, that's when they are forced south.
It's Nature in the City on Central Standard. Gene in Fairway, Kansas, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking my call. I was riding my bike off of Shawnee Mission Parkway and Mission Road. It's been about a month ago now, and there's a little tributary off of Mill Creek there off to the side, and I saw this little creature. I didn't know what it was. I was like, what the hell is that? And I looked at the thing, and then I got off my bike, got closer, and it was a little, a very young puppy, cub, whatever, baby fox that was eating carrion off to the side of the road. But the reason I didn't recognize the thing was it had this series of growths going up the tip of its tail, all the way up its back, and its face was encrusted with it. It looked like what an armadillo would look like. And so I came home immediately kind of traumatized by the poor little thing, and I called all around. It was a Sunday, though. Called all around trying to find, some help for this little creature. And finally I got a animal control officer at one of the police stations, and she told me that for wild animals, especially when they're diseased, they don't do anything for them. There's no shelter. There's nowhere to take them. You just let them die. And so my question is twofold. I couldn't believe this. I mean, did we come to that where we just let little animals die, and what could that disease have been? It looked like, just the crust of scales going up. And the thing was obviously sick. It was kind of shaking and eating something dead off to the side. So I'll take my question off the phone, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Gene.
I can't
ghastly sight for Gene.
I can't diagnose it, but I'm wondering if mange perhaps is part of that, or maybe distemper. The shaking part reminds me. I've seen raccoons with distemper, and they're very wobbly and shaky. And, yeah, unfortunately, there just really isn't a treatment for them other than, there are some of the rehab centers that we've mentioned, like at Lakeside, will take them in to euthanize them. But that's just a fact. There's just not much that can be done.
Yeah, disease is just it's just a factor that's
picture.
Out there.
It's nature in the city.
It's there, and it's one way the populations are controlled.
Carol in Overland Park just rescued a bunch of very young raccoons. She has kidnapped in parentheses, and finally put them in the hands of a vet after realizing they couldn't take care of them. What should someone do in that situation? You shouldn't really try to domesticate raccoons, should you?
Definitely not. They will regret that eventually if they do that.
They can be very aggressive as they get older.
Amanda in Overland Park writes, I have tons of moles this year. How can I reduce them without being cruel? They seem to love my new landscaping. Is it because I keep it watered and earthworms are plentiful? She wants to know about managing the mole population.
I would say that's a very good premise there, that she's creating good habitat for them. I'm not aware of good ways to discourage them. Most of the control, you either sort of put up with them or there's lethal methods, mm-hmm. More than anything.
Thar in Overland Park writes that she's noticed some birds like cardinals that have songs that differ slightly from region to region. Do other songbirds have various regional dialects from region to region?
Very good.
Do animals have accents?
Definitely.
You bet.
And it's been well documented. And there are birds, some of the ones that I think of around, a cardinal or a different bird will sound different if you travel south or north of here sometimes, if you're familiar with birds. But also there's great variation among calls of some species, even here locally, and cardinals are a good example. They have a lot of variations on their call. So does the Carolina wren. That's one I can think of.
Blue jays.
Blue jays make lots of different sounds. So, yeah, very perceptive.
Mm-hmm. Can animals tell that other bird may not be from around those parts?
I suspect they could.
I've heard there's a few birds that are called mimics, you know, like the mockingbird that people are probably familiar with around here. And I've heard mockingbirds in the Kansas City area that have actually been repeating songs from birds in the southwest United States. It's kind of interesting.
Speaking of interesting, there are about 5 peregrine falcon nests that have been sighted here in the KC area as well. Tell us about that. About 5?
There are definitely 5, exactly 5. One that's been there for quite a while is in downtown Kansas City. There's one in the Plaza area. There are 1 or 2 on different smokestacks on power plants here locally, and one up at the Iatan, near that power plant.
The Missouri Department of Conservation has webcams on some of the peregrine falcon nests around the state. Have you planned to do that at all in the KC area? Or?
Well, that's a good question. There is actually a cam on the one downtown, but it's not broadcast widely. However, you can see that it's at the Commerce Bank building downtown, and you can see it in their lobby, but it's not broadcast to the public that I'm aware of. One on the Missouri Department of Conservation's website on a pair in St. Louis you can see, though.
Mm-hmm. We got Barb in St. Joe, calling all the way up from St. Joe. Welcome to Central Standard, Barb. Hello, Barb. We do not have Barb, but we do have birds. Any birds that are seeing an increase or decrease in population in the metro this year? We talked earlier about the snow owl. Mm-hmm. So are we seeing any bird populations?
I think that Larry mentioned the Carolina wrens earlier. With the mild winter we had, the Carolinas are doing very well now. I've seen some that have brought a second clutch off already. So, they're a bird that's kind of dependent upon the weather. If it's a severe winter, why, they don't do so well.
That's a bird that definitely suffers in very severe winters around here. I worry as far as populations that might be down. To me, I don't see as many nighthawks around as I used to at night. That's a relative of the whippoorwill that flies around at night, particularly around lights and insect sources that you see in the city, maybe around baseball fields in the summertime. And I don't seem like I see as many.
Nest on gravel roofs of buildings.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Regine writes, I live in Lawrence and have a pergola, a large trellis covering her deck. And there's a large grapevine growing up its side with lots of grapes, wild vines, quite large but totally green still. Every year, none of them get to ripen because the possums climb up the vine and devour them. Sour as they are, they never have a chance to ripen. This year, she's trying lots of tanglefoot sap, a glue-like substance spread on the trunk of the vine. Do you have any other ideas? This is something we've heard through the what? Grapevine.
Well,
do you have any ideas about her grapevine
maintenance? Tanglefoot is a product that may work. It may not work.
Possum glued to that in the morning when you wake up? I don't know. Netting, orchard netting might be something temporary.
Vance and Waldo says he's dealing with a lot of buzzards and vultures, which are pretty much the same thing that he keeps seeing in the KC area. He's wanting to know what
is the deal with these buzzards and vultures?
Well, there are a number of them around the city, more than you'd think in an urban area. If you look up in the sky periodically, and they have a ready food source in the urban area, furnished by cars.
And they nest on tops of some of these large buildings.
Right.
What are some of the best places to go bird watching?
Kind of depends on the time of the year.
Yeah, I think any of the places we mentioned, trails, or take you through some areas where you can potentially see a lot of birds. I think in particular, when we get into the heat of the summer, just personally, you're better off in the more open areas like that feature more of the prairie birds, because those grassland birds in general, first of all, they're not under a forest canopy, so you got a better chance to see one. And they're more vocal and will sing into the heat of the day more than the forest birds. So maybe some of those open field and prairie-type habitats are better.
Cindy writes in with an idea for the laser bird trouble. She says she had a wren family on her back porch, and the adults would call pew, pew, pew every time they left the nest to go get food. And when they were coming back, too, which seems to be about every 5 minutes while the baby was there, it was cute at first, but it did get annoying, so repetitive and high-pitched. So a wren family may be what you have. Thank you, Cindy, for telling me that
perhaps a wren
family might be wrens, what I have.
Wrens, as we just mentioned, make a variety of sounds, so it's possible. Yeah.
It is Nature in the City on Central Standard. Our guests are Larry Rizzo, natural history biologist with the Missouri Department of Conservation, and Joe Werner, a biologist and urban ecologist here in the Metro. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, more Nature in the City with our guests, able to answer your questions and address your comments. Kansas City, what have you been noticing around town as it relates to plants and animals and their summer activity? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. It's another edition of Nature in the City on today's program. We're joined by Larry Rizzo. He's a natural history biologist with the Missouri Department of Conservation, and Joe Werner, reputable biologist and urban ecologist in the area, on the air for many years as part of the Nature in the City team. Kansas City, what have you been noticing around town as it relates to plants and animals and their summer activity? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also hit us up at centralstandard@kcur.org. Catherine in Mission Hills, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi. I have a question. I know you've addressed young birds that have fallen out of the nest, and I have a little cardinal that actually has fallen into a window well. And I noticed it in the garden below the nest, and then I noticed it's down in the window well. I'm going to fetch it out of there. The nest that it's from is way too high for me to reach, but I have a little birdhouse hanging in the same tree. If it's empty, can I toss that little guy in the birdhouse just so he doesn't get eaten?
First of all, does the bird have feathers, and can it flutter around at all, or what does it look like?
It can't really get much off the ground.
Okay, it's just about to gain independence, so I would just get it out of the window well and let the parents take care of it from there.
Okay.
If you can reach the nest, you could try to put it up there. Definitely don't put it in the birdhouse, because they're not a cavity nester, and the cardinal's not likely to go in there and take care of it necessarily.
Okay.
Put it in a shrub
or just off the ground somewhere where the adult can find it.
Thanks.
Don't put a cardinal in the birdhouse.
Nope.
Bethany from KC, welcome to Central Standard.
Yeah, I had a question earlier when we were talking about how the songbirds, how their song varies from region to region. I was wondering if that variance in song would be like a prezygotic barrier and interfere with mating.
Prezygotic barrier?
Yeah, like if it's something that would be like, oh, well, I don't recognize this bird's song, so I'm not going to mate here.
You don't know what she's talking about at all?
Well, there are different populations. There's no doubt about that of, you know, within species. But and, of course, sometimes there's, some crossings that happen out there, even among some of the warblers.
Bird song in general is important for species recognition and I'm sure to some degree mate selection. Mm-hmm. So that does play into it.
Thank you very much. Christy in the UMKC area.
Yes.
Welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm hoping that you can solve a mystery for me. I've never been able to figure out what these birds were doing. There were about, this was several years ago, maybe 8 or 9 years ago, I looked out my kitchen window, and in my backyard there were about 15 birds. They were starlings or grackles, kind of a dark-colored bird. They were all facing the same direction, and this is kind of hard to visualize, but they were all laying on their stomachs on the ground with their heads down on the ground, and they had spread their wings out and also were on the ground. I don't know what they were doing. Do you have any idea?
Christy, thank you for your question. Bird yoga?
I have a theory here. I think they're probably grackles. They're very intelligent birds. Mm-hmm. And grackles and other species, I believe mockingbirds are known to do this, will actually lay down on ant colonies. Mm-hmm. And the ants, I don't know, help remove parasites.
Symbiotic.
Yeah.
They don't eat them then?
No, they're not eating them. They're basically sort of being preened by them a little bit, but, which doesn't sound like something a person would want to do, but that might be what's going on. Or, you know, there are times when birds want to just absorb heat. That doesn't sound like how
they're laying on their bellies
it,
in the grass and spreading out their wings.
Yeah. Grackles are really smart birds, though. That's a bird I've observed on more than one occasion eating dried dog food from my back porch, where they pick it up and they walk it over to the water bowl and drop it in there to soften it up so that they can swallow it. That's pretty bright.
That's very intelligent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They probably discovered that it was, in fact, dog food and not bird food.
Well, it's too big for them to eat otherwise until they soften it up. So,
Suzanne, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. I just wanted to tell your listeners and your guest about a successful mole treatment that we have discovered. We live in the country, and we have moles everywhere. And we got sonic mole chasers that you stick in the ground and – or not sonic, but solar, excuse me. You stick in the ground, and they vibrate, and the moles don't like it, and they move.
Wow.
I've heard of kind of mixed results with that stuff, but if Suzanne can verify that.
That's great.
Yeah.
What does that do? What does that do for the moles when you stick that down in there?
Oh, they just don't like it. They can sense the vibrations, apparently.
Is it a vibration thing? Is it a
make them
audible thing? What is it? Does it shake the ground, or is it sort of like a dog whistle?
It's tactile. It's certainly tactile. And they're at one time you know, these little things that turned in the wind, turned in the wind that had little BBs in them and all, they were popular to try to chase moles away.
It's important to remember with moles that they don't – the damage they do or problems they create are mostly cosmetic, and people don't like running over their tunnels with the lawnmower kind of thing. But really, they don't harm anything in particular. So if you can put up with them, you can do that.
Larry, there's a National American Outdoors initiative being bandied about this summer and a couple of local things going on with the national theme of the American Outdoors. Tell us about the Casey Wildlands Project.
Well, Kansas City Wildlands is something we started over 10 years ago. Kansas City Wildlands is a local nonprofit, and we do stewardship activities on some of our local natural communities, the highest quality natural communities that we have around the urban area. We do work like combat invasive exotic plants. We have a bunch of volunteers that collect native seed that we use to restore some of these areas. We have periodic work days that are open to the public, and we're composed of a partnership of many different conservation groups and governmental agencies and private organizations and universities around town. And you can check out KansasCityWildlands.org. And visit our website and see what's going on and when the next work days are. But we welcome people to participate.
What wildflowers and prairie plants around these parts are going to be a big feature of the summer landscape this year?
Well, quite a variety, particularly when you get to the prairie and grassland areas. The showy things in the forest that I think we probably talked about in the last show that are good to visit in the early spring are pretty much done, but it's the open country thing. So you access places like the trail at Jerry Smith Park that we mentioned, or out at Kill Creek Park or Prairie Center, and you'll be able to see a lot of those summer wildflowers starting to bloom anytime. This is a really good time right now to visit prairies.
It's Nature in the City with Larry Rizzo and Joel Warner. Larry Rizzo is with the natural history biologist with the Missouri Department of Conservation, and Joel Warner is a biologist and urban ecologist. Kansas City, what have you been noticing around town as it relates to plants and animals in their summer activity? What have you noticed in your backyard, along the streets? What are the rare and interesting occurrences of plants and animals that you've seen? What's your Nature in the City story? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Wesley and KC, welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, I have a question regarding snakes and lizards, especially snakes. I grew up in South Wichita, and we used to catch a lot of ringneck snakes, gopher snakes, hognose snakes. And I haven't seen those in about 40 years. And I was just wondering what is going on with that.
Well, Wesley, we have a lot of ringneck snakes around. That's a very common snake and not a difficult one to find. The others, however, are a different story. Hognose snakes can be found, but they like sandy areas and bottomlands more than anything. So around here, the best place to come across one's probably down the Missouri River floodplain. Yeah. They eat toads a lot, and there's a lot of toads in those floodplains, too. The gopher snake is a subspecies or a relative of a snake in Missouri called a bull snake, which is a prairie animal. And due to, you know, declining prairie habitat and grassland habitat, that species is not doing particularly well, and we just don't see a lot of them anywhere.
Michelle in Northeast KC writes, every spring when she goes for a walk, she sees spots on the sidewalk that are so covered with ants you can't even see the concrete. Sometimes these puddles of ants are a couple of feet wide. Why did they do this? She's always wondered. Ants.
Ants are always colonizing. They're always looking for new areas to colonize, so it's very common to see anthills.
On the sidewalk, maybe someone spilled a Coke there, too. You never know.
Or they get in the cracks, and then you'll see the little mounds where they've been digging. And
there's also times they periodically disperse, so you might be seeing something like that going on, hard to say.
Marsha writes in to say she's noticed 1 to 3 birds with very large wingspans circling and gliding in the air different times of the year just north of 45 Highway between Route 9 and Lake Monticello Drive in Parkville. Do you know of any nests of particular birds in that area? Large wingspans circling the area just north of 45 Highway between Route 9 and Lake Monticello Drive up in Parkville.
First of all, Marsha, that's just a great place to see soaring birds because you're right off of those Los Hills, the hills that that border the Missouri River, and the birds will get updrafts coming off of the hills that they can ride, and then thermals that they can ride. The common ones that we'd see around here would be the turkey vulture that we'd seen. We've talked about a little bit earlier. Red-tailed hawks are pretty common, and eagles are common during migration. And of course, there are some eagle nests in the area also.
Thank you, Marsha, for that comment. Anna writes, when she sees a deer in Roanoke Park or along Southwest Boulevard, she wonders where are they actually staying at night. Is it even possible for them to exist in the middle of a residential area, a dense residential area such as Roanoke? That's what Anna writes. She's curious about the deer.
Well, they're there, so it's possible for them to exist there. They, as long as a deer can avoid basically collisions with cars is their biggest problem in a city, but there's plenty for them to eat in the city, including people's landscaping. We have a lot of parks and green space in Kansas City, and much of it has some connectivity to it, and deer certainly learn those avenues to get around even in urban areas.
It's not that far from the Missouri River bottoms there.
Right.
If you're just tuning in, you are listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I am your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guests are Larry Rizzo with the Missouri Department of Conservation and urban ecologist Joe Warner. It is Nature in the City, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org to tell us what you've been noticing around town as it relates to plants and animals as the summer gets underway. Alex in Overland Park, welcome to Central Standard.
thank you. It's really an insect, actually, but I service swimming pools and just always had an issue with June bugs. You know, forget June because they're around in May, June, July, August, and they just nonstop, and they're a pain because you're always emptying them out in the mornings. And why is there such a constant flow of these things? You think they'd run out, or they'd, you know, start the evolution process of knowing that diving into the water is going to kill them. Is there anything you can do short of turning off the lights to stop this, or am I just screwed pretty much? I'll take the answer off the air.
Alex's question, first of all, let's define what a June bug actually is.
Well, it depends who you ask. There are really two beetles. They're both beetles that people describe as a June bug, and the green one and the brown one. And depending on where you grow up, you call it a June bug. To me, a June bug was always the brown one, which is also referred to as the May beetle sometimes. Mm-hmm. But some people refer to the larger, greener ones. But they're out there in vast numbers. You will never control them. I don't know how in the world you would keep them out of a pool. Turning off lights at night will keep them from congregating a little bit. Yeah. But
won't keep them out of the pool.
No. Not necessarily, nope.
So pretty much May, June, whatever.
You're going to have them.
You're going to have them.
Yep.
April this year.
Yeah.
Pat writes in that there's a reddish bird in Midtown that has a similar shape to a sandpiper, longish legs and slender. This bird is new to me this year. What is it?
Well, if it's a Midtown and it looks kind of like a shorebird, it's about got to be a killdeer, I would believe. Is it around? If it's around parking lots and things like that, they will nest in those kinds of areas, little gravelly areas where they lay their eggs.
Jim in Lee Summit, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi.
Hello.
Got a question about an owl I saw, and I'd like a follow-up on crayfish, if I could. I just wonder how rare it was. Earlier, about when the trees were, leaves were coming out, I saw an owl, and I was about 100 feet away from it, and got my book out, and it was a real good-sized owl, probably not a little bit smaller than a great horned owl, but the book showed it was a barred owl, at close as I come to it, and like had bar stripes around it, and its eyes were just dark black. And how rare is that to see it around here?
Barred owls, Jim, are actually pretty common around here, but like any owl, you know, being nocturnal, we don't see them that much, tend to hear them more. They're a forest owl, and they particularly like being close to water, so river bottoms and forested tracks near water. But like a lot of creatures, they've adapted pretty well to the city, and I hear of reports of them in surprisingly urban areas around here, too.
Jim, you also had a follow-up on crayfish.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
This thing was sitting next to my pond for just hours and hours. I don't know what it was hunting, but, these crayfish that dig holes in the ground, these things, you know, make a big mound of mud, and they don't live in the pond. They just dig down to the water table. You know anything about those and how you can control them?
Well, I don't know anything about controlling them. They're called a prairie or grassland crayfish, and you're right. They dig down to where crayfish have to keep their gills moist in order to stay alive, so they get down where there's moisture, and they do make those chimneys when they're excavating, but I don't know any good way to really control them, and barred owls will eat them.
Yeah.
Well, there's a connection. There's a connection between the barred owls and the crayfish. So there you go, Jim.
And coyotes eat them too. And we had an earlier question about coyotes, and I think that the caller was asking about the fact that they're more abundant this year. And it's like a lot of other things. There seems to be more mice. The mice were breeding earlier this year, and so there's more mice around, more snakes, more coyotes to consume both those.
Eve on Twitter at KCURCST, that's our Twitter handle, says she has a pet starling, and we call that flat trans-like state sunning. That flat trans-like state of a bird spreading its wings and its belly on the grass, she calls that sunning. Her bird, Harry Flugelman, that's the name of the bird, apparently, Harry Flugelman, suns several times a day. Harry Flugelman just gets out there, spreads its wings, and birds sunning.
Well, there are a lot of birds that do sun like that. Earlier this week, I saw a Mississippi kite doing that south of here. You know, of course, turkey vultures are well known for doing that early in the morning,
right?
Drawing their wings.
Speaking of winged creatures, what's up with bats in the area? I saw a couple of bats out the other night. What are bats doing this time of year?
Were you at Royal Stadium?
No, I was definitely not at Royal Stadium. Not much bats over there.
Oh, that was cruel.
No.
Actual bats, flying bats.
Yeah, there's some pretty common. Bats are pretty common in this area. The most common is the big brown bat, which is really the largest bat that we have in the Midwest. And, you know, they'll get in attics and houses, bats in the belfry, expansion cracks and bridges and all. And they do a really good job of eating a lot of insects. So they're good to have around.
But there are bats at Kauffman Stadium, not the kind that hit for average, obviously, but actual bats. Why do they choose to congregate in stadium atmosphere, Starlight Theater, Kauffman Stadium?
Any older buildings or larger buildings, as Joe mentioned, have cracks in the between the joints and the concrete and things like those little tight spaces are places bats like to roost, and there's insect populations in those areas. Important to mention, if people do have them in their homes this time of year, this is not the time of year to try to do anything about it because they will have young, and it's actually illegal to disturb them now, but you don't want
even to. If they're on your property, it's illegal to disturb
them? If they're in the attic or something like that, you don't want to disturb them now because if you try to evict them, the young will remain in there and you will have dead bats in your home, which you don't want. And they're beneficial animals, so we don't want to do that. But there are ways you can exclude them once the breeding season is over, like about mid-August. Basically, you need to find where they're coming and going from the home, and you can install basically a one-way bat door over that opening that allows them to leave but can't get back in.
Utility belts as well for the bats? Sherry writes, I live in the Westport area. She's seen possums and raccoons in her backyard, but recently a neighbor claims to have seen a beaver in the yard. Do beavers live away from ponds and rivers, or is she mistaken?
I'm going to guess that's a groundhog.
More than likely a groundhog.
Not a beaver.
Yeah.
Beaver don't come into people's yard. There's
either
no trees.
Not really. Not unless you back up to a river or something, I suppose. But groundhog's very common.
Mike in KC, welcome to Central Standard.
Yeah, thanks. Love the show, man. I was calling because I am curious about the vast number of roadkill deer I've been seeing all over the metro.
Been seeing a lot of road kills all over the metro. Is this an
abundance? Road kills deer.
Road kills deers. Deer. Yeah. Specific deer.
It's a constant problem. I don't know that I've noticed any more recently than in the past. This is generally not the time of year you see as many as actually other times of year in the fall and, mm-hmm. and again in the spring about March or somewhere in there when the food supplies are really low.
Well, thank you, Mike. Sharon in Independence wants to know, is there a good resource for identifying bird songs? We mentioned the differentiating bird songs and the regional dialects in bird songs and the different pitches and tones. What's a good resource for him there?
Yeah, I can't point to a specific one, but if you get on the internet and start Googling around, Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology, there are CDs and things. You can Google a bird and find a call recording on the internet anytime.
The Stokes system is very good for calls also.
There's some birding specialty shops around mm-hmm. town that she can look up, and they will sell those kinds of products. So there are places out there.
Go to a nature center if you have one near you, or down here to the Nita Gorman Discovery Center and talk to the folks there.
Jane, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. I have two questions. I have seen it. We live north of the river, about 8 miles south of KCI, and are really fortunate that we have a wonderful habitat for nature. Our neighbors have a pond and wide open spaces. Our lots have to be a half acre or more. But what we've seen is a great influx in groundhogs, and they're very friendly. Our dog is very friendly. How do we keep the groundhogs want to play with the dog?
Wow.
Jane, I'd be very, very careful because the groundhog can be very aggressive and really hurt your dog.
Okay.
I don't know what size. They would not want to play with my dog.
Well, we have a 22-pound dog.
Yeah, so. that's an even match there.
Yeah.
Yes, I would be careful there. They're a rodent, so they don't have canine teeth or anything, but they can put up a scrap.
Yeah.
Okay, and then years ago, I mean, probably in the last 5 years, we put up a bat house, again, because of the proximity of the pond. It's right next door to our property. So obviously we get a lot of mosquitoes. We put up a bat house, followed the instructions, you know, put it up in a tree facing the pond, and we have never gotten bats. Is there anything we can do to attract them?
You should probably use in a bat cave rather than a bat house. just a suggestion. Go ahead, Larry.
Jane, bat houses have very low occupancy rates, period, because bats are very, very particular about where they roost, and it all depends. It's very temperature-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
In
okay.
general, bat houses placed on trees don't do a very good job of attracting them. They're better off being on a building, generally east-facing, where they get morning sun. I would advise looking up a website called Bat Conservation International.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they will have a lot of information about building and placement of bat houses.
Thank you very much, Jane, for contributing to the conversation. Give us a quick update on the invasive species here coming this summer.
Well, let me just name one that I've recently come across for the first time here in Cass County, and it's appropriate because the berries will be ripe soon, but there's an invasive blackberry called Himalayan blackberry. It's taken over parts of the country, and it is the gnarliest, nastiest plant I've ever seen in my life, and that's a new one on the horizon.
All right.
I would have to say zebra mussels because they are really starting to cause some problems in some areas, especially over in Kansas where they've been transported from one lake to another, and they're actually clogging up some water supply systems for cities.
Zebra mussels and Himalayan blackberry is the latest invasive species here. Poison ivy control is always a hot topic this year as well. Go to KCUR.org for more details on our Nature in the City site. That's Nature in the City for the day, folks. Our guest is Larry Rizzo, nature history biologist with the Missouri Department of Conservation, and Joe Warner, a biologist and urban ecologist, helping us get prepared for summer. Thank you very much for coming, fellas.
Thank you.
Good job, Lonnie.
And tune in tomorrow when Monroe Dodd tackles subjects of historical significance with a look at past and present-day Waldo, plus the history of the Westport Presbyterian Church. Our show is executive produced by Bill Anderson, produced by Andreas Lindsay, with help from Charlie Upchurch. Kim Noble is our announcer. Emily Mutard manages our website. The intro music is by Miles Bonney. The outro music is by The Will Knotts. Up to Date is next with a discussion of the book, The Trial of Missouri Outlaw Jesse James, Jr. That plus the weekend to-do list. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.